Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
It's Thanksgiving week, my man. This is a very special time for basketball coaches. As a high school player, November is when you started playing your games. As a high school coach, you finally can see your team on the court against, you know, bad guys instead of just your own team. Mm-hmm. And the business we're in, obviously, we're doing this for a while. But college basketball, I'll be watching a game from 1:30 on today, college and then NBA. I don't think I'm watching G League tonight. And I heard Neil deGrasse Tyson talk once about, without getting too biological, think of all the babies that have never even been born. You think about it, historically speaking. And so we get to cover the game that we love and hopefully see family and friends this week. It's a good week.
It is a very good week for colleges. Remember, it's feast week often, right? And so you'll have like a lot of these early season tournaments.
Yeah, Maui starts today. Maui. There's a lot of tournaments, mm-hmm. but Maui starts today. I'll be watching Gonzaga, yeah. Purdue at 5.
The Great Alaska Shootout was one. I don't know if they still do that one anymore, but that was one they used to do. Like, it's just, yeah, if you're a basketball fan, it's a fun time. As David also mentioned, hopefully, for those of you that can and are able to, we hope that you get to spend time with, family, friends, loved ones, and then people that you would like to. Thanks again to our listeners for participating in Ask Coach Thorpe. We will be back with Ask Coach Thorpe again, this week. We'll do a special episode right before the holiday. We'll do some Ask Coach Thorpe questions and some fun things that Henry, David, and I are going to do. Again, if you want to send a question in, you send it in to TrueHoop at TrueHoop.com. That is TrueHoop at TrueHoop.com.
And don't ask me questions. Well, you can ask me questions about meal prep and recipes for Thanksgiving. Just don't expect any decent answer. It's not, you can ask me any booze. Ask me you want. Don't ask me any football. There's no TV allowed in my house on Thanksgiving Day. There's no football at all, or anything else for that matter. But if you're welcome to ask me any basketball question you want, that's for sure.
That's good stuff there, people. All right, David. A team that is, you know, gotten my attention, a lot of people's attention, when we've talked about them a fair amount, just by nature of what they've done over the past few seasons as it relates to accumulating draft capital. But we are starting to see on the court a team that is playing very good basketball. They were in the play-in tournament last year, played well. And, of course, I'm talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're a phenomenal team right now. They are 9-4. They're at the top top four in the West. I think they can be a top six team and for sure be a playoff team this year. We know Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is outstanding. I mean, he was top five in MVP last year. He was an NBA, all-NBA first-teamer. And rookie Chet Holmgren is number one among all rookies in estimated plus minus. He is playing fantastic. We talked about both Jalen Williams that we liked, Cason Wallace, Chet, Josh Giddey, I mean, Isaiah Joe. There's so many awesome players on this team. And so my question, David, is how good can this team be? Not about the playoffs, but throughout an 82-game regular season. We're early, they're top four right now. How good can this team, as it's currently constructed, be in the regular season?
I don't love when I'm the Larry David to the group.
But time to curb your enthusiasm.
I would suggest a little curbing of the enthusiasm, yeah. Not with Shai. He's just spectacular, isn't he? When I first started doing this, Carlos Boozer, I used to call it the Boozer bump, where he'd be behind you under the rim. And just as the ball was coming off the rim, he'd give you a bump forward, not enough where you'd fall into the bleachers and, you know, get a foul called on him. But you can't jump when you're falling forward. It's pretty hard to do. Mm-hmm. And then he would get the rebound, whatever. Shai's got the Shai bump. Everyone tries to get the Shai bump. The drive, make contact, shoot the jumper. Mm-hmm. He's extraordinary. I am not trying to curb your enthusiasm about him. The rest of the team, they're young. I think the way you framed it is great. As a regular season team, I think they'll have more success, like maybe this year's Sacramento Kings, mm-hmm. as opposed to the postseason. They have a lot of growth that they need to still go through. Chet shooting 46% from three. I don't think that will last. It's possible. Like with a player that special, anything's possible. I just don't think it's likely. Josh Giddey has been a big disappointment, actually.
Not good.
No.
Yeah.
His reputation is better. I remember watching him this summer at Summer League, watching as a fan. He's got the long hair. He does the Steve Nash over the probably because of Nash over his ears. I remember watching him watch the Thunder play and thinking, young man, you've not made it yet. You only think you have. Like you've, and I'm not suggesting he's not working his ass off. He probably is, but it's not showing up yet. He's not shooting well. He's not defending at all. Lou Dort, solid. Like he could be a good player on a playoff team. Jalen Williams, pretty good. The starter
Jalen Williams.
Yeah, we got to come up with a better way to discern the two. The non-charge taking Jalen Williams, pretty good. Yeah, trending in the right way. He's the second year player. The other Jalen Williams not doing as well.
Nope.
So I think that it's a work in progress. I expect Chet to shoot worse. I do think Josh will come around some, but he was a bad shooter even last year. He's just not even the level of last year. And so I could see some cold streaks coming where they can't really manufacture wins. I think they're expertly coached. And they play a really good style for them, the five out drive and kick style. That's so much space on Shea. They've also been healthy. So I think I had them in the low 40s as wins. Maybe I'm off by a few. I don't know they get to 50. Other teams got to start playing better in the bottom of the West so that you know more teams can't just win every game they play against bad teams.
Right.
But they're a team to watch, and as you mentioned, the draft pick, and this is something Henry's been talking to us about. They just have so much. I do think it's wise to get off on some and get off some of those trades, some of those draft picks, and get a better player or two for you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Sam Presti is considering that all the time.
Oh, without question. You know, SGA and Chet, as I mentioned, right now through 13 games or whatever, wherever they are, about 13. Very good estimated plus minus.
Yeah.
Starter Jalen Williams, he's plus 1 point something. So he's very good. Lou Dort's just above net neutral, like a plus 0.2. So those four guys are, you know, good.
Yeah.
Giddy is almost a minus 4,
yeah,
right? Like he's been bad. And everybody else on the roster is a minus. And so, you know, again, regular season, I think they'll be fine. The question is, though, David, and we've talked about this before, Shea isn't 21. Shea's 24, 25. He might be like, look, guys, this is my second year, going to be all NBA first team, it looks like. I might even be better in MVP, especially if we're doing well. And I know it's like, you know, you don't rush, you don't, but it's also a thing, David, where there's no guarantee in this league. We don't know what's going to happen next week, let alone, oh, next year we'll build and get this guy. You know, if they are on this track and they're still doing well by Christmas and they're still in that top four, I think it's probably Presti's best move to get another star in here to be like, no, I think we can do something now.
Yeah, star or not, upgrade without sacrificing too much of your future. I preseason suggested a trade with Chet and Giannis. I wonder how, I mean, Milwaukee fans all thought I was an idiot. And they're pretty good. They're 9-4. They're pretty good. I don't think they're going to win a championship this year. But seeing how good Chet's doing, that'd be interesting to start a franchise over with him. Not to say OKC would have done it. I have no idea.
Yeah. Would you, I mean, God, Chet's playing. He looks like he could be so good. Like, but you're like, look, if you want to get someone with SGA now, Chet's your best bargaining chip is what you're saying.
Before the season. You know, yes. It was still a risk. You didn't really know. Now, you know, once you start seeing some of these things play out, and I didn't think it was going to happen. I was just suggesting that it's something you should look into. We don't know yet about Chet's health. This is just because his body's so – it's not been good in the past looking like him and having a long career. We're just getting started. We're not a month into the season yet.
Correct.
Yeah, we're not a month in. So let's just see how things go. But I don't think he'll – I mean, maybe you trade starter Jalen Williams, if depending on who you can get for it.
Yeah.
Josh Giddey certainly is someone. The only thing is you hate to trade low,
right, when he's not playing well.
So nothing's going to happen before December 15 anyway. It's a month from a few days ago. So because that way everyone except for those who signed the extension late in the summer in this early season, everyone else is going to be eligible to be traded. So that's why you'll see more of a flurry of activity after December 15.
Yeah, for sure. But guys, Oklahoma City, I mean, if you're not watching them on League Pass, you're missing out. This team is super exciting. That five-out style they play, really good. They're connected.
They're well coached, well-run franchise in every respect, pretty much, yeah.
If you're an OKC fan, not for the top-level talent, but it's got to remind you of the early days of KD, Russ, and Harden, right? And Ibaka and those guys, right? Now, remember, that team, once they started going to the playoffs, it was Western Conference Finals every year, pretty much, unless one of them was hurt. So, and NBA Finals. So you're not quite there yet, but, you know, it's got to give you some hope if you're if you're an OKC Thunder fan about what could happen in the future. A team that's tasted a lot of championship success, but is, you know, not playing so great right now.
Penn State? Yes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
No one else has a lot of championships.
Yes. they've lost six straight. And, you know, it's easy to be like, look, no Draymond. Steph missed a couple games, you know, and that's why they're losing. But, David, I think there's more to it than that. And, again, look, Steph and Draymond are great. But to be so dependent on 35-year-old-plus guys, that doesn't bode well for the grind of the regular season. Now, if you tell me we get to the playoffs and everybody's magically healthy, sure, well, I'm ready to roll, but we got to get there first. And so I have some concerns about Golden State right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I just was, you when you mentioned earlier, I started looking them up a little bit. They're not shooting well. And Klay did this last year. And I haven't looked up a Klay shooting this year, but it's, I don't think it's good.
Yeah, not great. Yeah, no, he's bad.
Not good. Moody's playing better. Kuminga, not there yet. But you're three for Kuminga?
Yes.
We've seen Scotty Barnes make a huge leap. We'll talk about that. Evan Mobley, a big leap. Not quite the same as Scotty. Jalen Suggs doing pretty well that same class. Kuminga still has time to develop. It's early. Wiggins has kind of fallen off, and he needs to. He had 31 the other night, but he needs to get much better. I hate to. I could not throw dirt on them. Yeah,
well, you'd be silly.
I think that teams will shoot a little worse over the course of time. They'll shoot better, and they'll figure some stuff out. I like Chris Paul for them.
Yeah,
and I like Dario Saric for them, which I did going in. They're both doing well. Chris Paul especially, but Saric is doing good.
Yes. I mean, with the Warriors, David, it's the same story as it often is. The non-Stephen Curry-named Warriors, which is everybody else, have not been good. Taylor Snar's early EPMs come out. Chris Paul is the only other positive estimated plus-minus player at 1.8, and he comes off the bench.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean...
maybe not for long.
And well, exactly. And look, yes, Klay got better, but remember, you also look at it from the standpoint of where you are slotted salary-wise, right? That's a $43 million a year player. And he's not giving you $43 million a year level production and wins.
We wouldn't. Right.
And so this is a problem, right? And Kuminga and Moody, it's key for them, right? This is the time now when Steph is out for a little knickknack or Draymond does something stupid and gets himself tossed for five games. That's when, okay, Kuminga and Moody, it's time now for them to be like, we can do this. We're the young guns. We've been here for 3 years now.
Right.
We know the system. And it's not quite happening. Their minutes get yo-yoed a lot often. And you always say that's oxygen for these guys playing time. And when they don't have the consistency and they're worried about, I'm going to get pulled if I make a mistake, which means you're going to make a mistake because it's baked in.
I'm going to read you stats over the course of some years. I want you to guess what player this is and what stat it is, okay?
Okay.
So we're going to start with the 2017-18 season. And then to the last stat I give you will be from this year, okay?
Okay.
44%, 40.2%, 38.5%, 41.2%, 33%. What's that and who's that for?
3-point shooting, Klay Thompson.
Correct. So the worst year he had was 38.5 two seasons ago. After missing an entire season, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not betting against him. Yeah.
No.
We're paying attention. We're paying attention because Curry still's got it. He still got it. Chris Paul still got it. Mm-hmm. So other guys need to step up.
And they do because, again, they have to manage the 82 games, right? Because if Klay and if all those guys got to play like 70, 80 games for you guys just to make the playoffs, that means playoffs aren't going to be good. They're going to be worn down. You have to have those guys play at a better level. Wiggins especially. Because remember,
Wiggins, horrendous.
When they won the title, it was a huge part of, oh, this guy's in his 20s, super athletic. Like, but that season, David, maybe that was the outlier season, and that's not who he really is who he's always been in Minnesota.
He's had a couple good seasons in a row in the 80th plus percentile for EPM.
In EPM.
38%, 39.3%, 39.6%. That's three straight years of improvement. If you go back the year before that in Minnesota, he was at 33.2, and then he got traded that year. Now he's down to 22%. He's in the first percentile, which means he's in the last percentile. You just have to assume he didn't forget how to shoot. Yeah. You do? I'm not saying that he's going to definitely get better, but he's likely to get better. And he needs to.
He should.
He needs to.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, if he's not playing at that level, this team is, it's going to be problematic for them. David, we always talk about coaches and being prisoners of the moment.
Yeah.
And it's hard, right? Because in the heat of battle, coach isn't thinking about Wednesday's game or next week. No, we're trying to win right now. And that's what their brain is. And I was thinking about that last night. I was watching the Jazz Suns double overtime game. And I'm watching that game, David, and I'm like, Frank Vogel, this is a man who is not thinking about anything but this double overtime game right now. And I say all that to say, Durant played 46 minutes every minute of both overtimes. Booker played 40 minutes. Booker, by the way, coming off a calf injury, played every minute of both overtimes.
Give him the schedule. This is a very good point by you.
And the Suns have a must-win group stage game coming up on Tuesday at home against the Portland Trail Blazers, which is not on national TV, and that's important because it's the first night of a back-to-back with Game 2, which is on national TV against the Golden State Warriors. And we know the league has its rules about player participation, unless they're hurt, whatever, whatever. Let me ask you this question, David. If you were the head coach of the Suns and you probably wouldn't have played them both overtimes, all those minutes, but let's say you did, what would you do now, given this is what your schedule is going forward?
I mean, the answer is pretty easy. I would talk to the doctors. I'd make sure we have great doctors and physios and find out from the player and the experts, like, where are we at here? What are the increased likelihood? There's always injury risk. What's the increased likelihood of injury risk? Because no one game's more important than the health of those guys for the season.
Correct. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what Vogel does decide to do. Yeah. Because, you know, the in-season tournament matters, right? And so let's win. And that's the thing. They're not good enough. They could say, okay, Book and Durant can rest that game and we'll beat the Blazers. The rest of the team's not good. So there's no guarantee they'll win that. But that's a non-national TV game. Yeah. Whereas Wednesday is an ESPN game right before Thanksgiving. You know, look, if you ask Katie and Book, players back-to-back, 70 minutes, whatever. Don't listen to them. Because, you know, they'll play till their body falls apart.
I totally agree.
But it will be interesting to watch what happens. By the way, David, that was what an insane game that was last night.
The Utah game?
Yeah, that was like the double overtimes, the cuts. I was like, Jesus.
So this is like the third time this year where there's been a referee ruling that was a rule I never heard of before.
Okay.
Did you hear the explanation at the overturn?
Yes. So the explanation was Durant made contact with the ball.
First of all, describe the play real fast. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the Suns are up three with 0.9 of a second left.
So catch and shoot time for Jazz.
Catch and shoot. Exactly. They get the ball in. Lowry marking corner.
They ran
corner
a great three. Play to get him open. You know, he's 6'9", so that helps that he can shoot over someone.
7 foot, really.
Yeah. You're right. I'm sure he's calling that. Yeah.
So Durant races out to contest. And from most of the angles, it looked like a foul. So the Ashley, I forget her last name, she calls the foul. Okay, we got to go to replay because anything in the last, whatever, we have to go to the monitor and watch. I saw a bunch of angles. There was definitely Durant's contest arm for sure, and his bottom arm also had a little bit of his hip. Now, most veterans are really savvy about that. If the ref is on the baseline, they can't see your opposite arm on the other side of the body.
But the camera saw it.
Correct. The camera saw it, which is why you have replay. Now, when you go to replay, as you know, David, that opens up anything that happens on that play is now fair game because we went to replay.
So before you give the result, Durant's right arm, right hand, definitely on Marcus's hip. Going, he's already kind of falling out of bounds because he was running so fast to get open to begin with to get the three off. He can't just stand there expect to get open. He was running fast. Right. So Durant's clearly had at least some pushing going on with his right arm. The left arm goes up. Mm-hmm. It does hit the basketball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it does hit his hand, arm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead from there.
And then so the referee
very
says.
Very clear.
Yeah, very obvious. The referee says.
So what did you think would happen when they were ruling it?
When I saw it, I was like, all right, they're probably going to call a foul there and be like, you're going to shoot three
free throws. Because of the right hand or the left hand?
Nope. Because of the left hand. I think they would have been like incidental on the right. They would have let that go. Even though
it's Kevin Durant. If it was Kevin Durant shooting And some rookie.
That's a foul on Lauri Markkanen for sure.
For sure.
This is your issue with NBA officials, is that if it is Joe Blow, who's the 15th man on the match, it doesn't matter.
Jalen Suggs is a good player, but he's a top five pick. But if he touches Durant on his right hip, it's a foul.
Foul.
And maybe if he touches Markkanen, but not if it's a superstar, not if it's Godzilla versus Mothra. Right. Mothra's a super monster, but ain't fun Godzilla.
Right. So they're like, and I wonder too if they were like, do we really want to do three overtimes right now? Like,
we got to save Durant for the national TV game. Adam Silver got David Stern's call from the grave. Adam, we got a big national TV game coming and a play-in game. We need Durant. 46 and up. Cut it.
They called Secaucus and Adam Bashton. Absolutely not. Yeah. We are not going to three overtimes.
And tell them that if you touch the ball first, you can't foul anyone.
Right.
That's the NFL rule for pass interference. As I used to be, I don't follow football anymore. It used to be if you deflected the ball to the line of scrimmage as a safety, if someone in the line of scrimmage or a linebacker deflected the ball, it doesn't matter how early I hit the intended receiver, it's fair game. Right.
Correct. Okay.
I guess now that's the case for basketball. As long as you block the shot first, you
can
pummel the guy if you want to. It doesn't matter what you do. That's insane. It's insane. It's a made-up rule, in my opinion. I want to see more follow-up on that.
Of course.
He fouled him twice.
He did.
And I had no rooting interest in any of it. I don't care.
Right. You're just like,
he fouled his right hand. Can't touch a guy. Right. I tell my players all the time, hands off shooters.
Yes.
Don't give them a chance to call. It's a different rule for them. And then to be able to hit the ball, as long as you follow, then it doesn't matter. It's so weird to me. It's still affecting. I've made shots when I played where a guy blocked it and it still went in. I probably would have missed it otherwise.
Don't we always say hands part of the ball?
Yeah, well, I never. The referees used to. I mean, people said that, but the referees didn't believe that. But when you shoot the ball was still a little bit on his finger pads when his hand got hit. So that's why it was so
that affected
short.
The shot.
Yeah. But if you hit the hand first, it doesn't matter. That's just new to me. Maybe it is. Maybe it's in the rule book. I did not know it.
It was. Listen. Whatever the Jazz are, whatever, it was an amazing game. What a way to end it. And it's so funny because, to your point, that same play, if you watch enough Durant or any elite shoot, that's a foul call they call for every time. When he makes the shot, he'll try and be like, he hit me. He's like, why aren't you calling the foul? And so, listen.
We don't want to trash refs anymore. We're already frustrated. But tell them what happened after the game.
So after the game, everybody does just a normal thing, shaking hands, whatever. And Durant stands after hugging Will Hardy, the Jazz head coach, and he stares at Lauri. You know you grabbed my arm before.
Is that what he said? I didn't know what he said. I did not hear that part. I just saw the smile on his face.
Yes. And then him and Lauri had a really nice embrace and just chat. And
there's respect. I don't know what Lauri scored in the game. What did he score?
38 and 17. He was a monster.
There's respect. Like KD respects the game. He really is a great ambassador as a basketball player. He really is.
Yes.
He is not aloof on the court. No. He is very approachable. And I think he just loves Hoopers. And he doesn't have children, but if he were to have children or nephews or whatever, and talking about the old days when the Lauri's brought up, that tall white dude, that boy can play. I could just hear Katie say he could really go. He'd give you 50 in your sleep if you're not careful. Yeah.
You got that right. Yeah. No,
I mean, he respects him a lot.
No doubt. They had a lovely embrace. Yeah. And I love that.
And I think Markkanen was like, he was giddy. Like, he loves me, KD respects me enough to talk shit to me, whatever.
Man. It was a wonderful, wonderful exchange by both of them. And I just love that about it, right? Like, and to your point, Durant's just a hooper, as the kids say, right? That's all this dude. So to your point, he respects the game and respects anybody who approaches the game in the way that he does, which is why he's like, Lauri, I like this, my guy. Like, that's a way to hoop.
Yeah.
Like,
I think that almost all of the great players I've ever been associated with at any level were the same. I think it helped them become great. They just, they didn't care what your game was like and what you looked like or where you were from. If it impacted winning, because they get it. It's about winning. The ones that just want to look cool and put up points, I just don't think they're winners. You can transform. You can change. It's always been my issue with LaMelo. And he ain't alone, by the way. By any stretch of the imagination, you're allowed to grow up. And KD's grown up, and so is Lori. And I think KD gets it. Like, this guy is fucking great.
No, Lori's awesome, man. Listen, as you know, Kevin Durant, Lori, that's my basketball love language. Tall guys who can shoot and do awesome things on the floor. Look, the Jazz are 4-9 after that. And there was a home-and-home series, which, by the way, David, I love those two-game series where players go. Because what you see is, you see the teams actually make adjustments. Yeah. They defended very differently, the Jazz did, from game one to game two. Yeah. And it was clear. And I was like, ooh, this is nice.
Yeah.
Look, the Jazz have a bright future. That five-out style they play is fantastic.
I wish the league could do way more of this, by the way. Miami's in Chicago for game two after kind of giving up a pretty good lead and having a seven-game win streak set, maybe six or seven games. So they're playing again tonight. I wish we did that a lot more, where it was like baseball. Great. Like baseball. It's just you stay in the city, less travel.
Yeah.
I like the second game. It gives you a little bit better indicator of what's going to be like in the postseason. I like it a lot. Yeah.
No, it was a wonderful, wonderful weekend of basketball. You know, thinking about the Jazz really quick, David, and we've talked about this before. God, I just feel like Lori's not going to be on their timeline when they're right, you know, because I feel like he's already kind of ready to start doing some real winning now, and the rest of the Jazz not.
But they have enough picks and young players where maybe young players where they can bring some help in. I'm not saying Zach LaVine. I'm not saying DeMar DeRozan, but better players what they have to go with that superstar in Lori.
Yeah, no, because I mean Lori, look, he keeps playing like this. He's going to make an All NBA team. I think I had him on one of mine last year.
I think I did too.
He's right there.
I think I did.
He had an excellent season. All right, guys, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. Okay, David, Taylor Snars. Dunkson 3's website, which we use a lot here at True Hoop. The net ratings have been out for the teams ever since game one, but we now have enough data culled together for the early look at EPM. And it's still early, so the stats are still muddied. But looking at the top 15 in EPM, which I put in the document, what stands out to you?
There's a couple obvious ones. Maxie's emergence is, you know, huge. Not surprising, but huge.
Yeah.
You certainly have to talk about Chet as a rookie. Big men have a bit of an advantage in this, but you can't detract. The list is not just big men, although the top two are. Steph Curry being where he is. I'll have to throw out two others. I named Donovan Mitchell as a dark horse MVP candidate before the season started.
Yep.
I'm really glad to see what he's doing. Yep. And then, for the one person out there who thought that Scottie Barnes could be the best player in that class.
That was you.
I had the head start of watching all of his games as a freshman in college, and I'm watching the Raptors play a good amount. Like he's kind of walking the path. Yeah. And so seeing his name there, now he's shooting well. I don't know if that'll last or not, but that's helping a lot, giving him some swagger too. That's what stood out. And we shouldn't ignore that once again, Jokic and Embiid lead the world. That's not nothing.
We'll get back to them in a minute.
Yeah.
Scottie Barnes, 96th percentile on offense, 100th percentile on
defense. Oh, he's a monster on defense now. Yeah.
And he's so long and just athletic.
He plays so hard. I heard Brian Scalabrine talk about that. They play in Toronto.
Yeah.
And he said he just plays so much harder this year. I think the game just – he always used to play hard. I think it just kind of evened out, and he knows where he's supposed to be now, and he's really, really competing. Yeah.
Do you think that because, you know, we love the game, and it's fun, and you prefer players play with joy. Do you feel like he's – okay, it's a business. I understand now what it is. I know what my role is now on this team. I want to be good. This is what I have to do, right? And it's sort of like more professional, but he hasn't quite found the balance to – have fun with it. It's like, I'm going to do this hard and do it well.
I saw him smile yesterday. I had not seen him smile all season. He smiled yesterday. I don't remember what happened, but it was the old Scotty smile. It's a really charismatic smile. And he's a very charismatic person and wasn't carrying himself as much. I think that with the best players in the league, Michael Jordan's talked about this before. They know they can always get theirs. Like, they know it. They know how to do it now. They know how to play the game. And I mean that the way it's not just the cliche version. Yeah, they know how to play, but they know how to manipulate the game to make sure they get the numbers they need to get paid the way they need to get paid. Like, that's such a gift. Most guys can't do that.
Right.
And I think Scotty's figuring that out. Yeah. And so it making threes helps a ton because he isn't super quick. You know, he's quick, but not super quick with the ball. He's a tall guy. And so that weaponizes him in a way he wasn't weaponized before. And the change of coaching and the change of style, it kind of gave him the team a little bit, which caused Siakam to really struggle. But now the last six games, Siakam's been their best player.
Yep.
Scotty's been their second best player, which is good. Now they got two instead of one. And they both were very good yesterday. And I'll tell you an exchange that happened yesterday, which is important to recognize. They're murdering the Pistons, who are super beat up. Cade Cunningham looked better yesterday. He's not had a good year. It's a long way to go for him still. I don't think he's athletic like he used to be. And he never was a great athlete to begin with. The injuries have taken their toll and just not playing. So they're killing him. There's a hit ahead pass to Siakam, who's got pretty much an uncontested layup or dunk. And he gives it to Poeltl, who gets the finish and the and one. He didn't have to do that. But if you know Siakam's game, he always, like he's I think one of the five or six guys that have this long list of 27 points and five rebounds, or 10 rebounds, five assists, five steals, whatever it is. Some crazy stat. He's in there. But then just a few minutes later, same thing. Long pass to Scotty. I don't remember who threw it. Scotty has an uncontested layup for dunk. Pascal's racing. He gives it to Pascal for the dunk. And it kind of hit me like that's the first time I've seen it where Pascal's total unselfishness is starting to trickle down because that's how Scotty used to play. Mm-hmm. I had Corey Brewer, who's the world's fastest human on the court that you'll ever see at 6'9", always threw the pass to the big guy because he was always at it everywhere. He's so fast. But if no one was back on defense, he didn't need the extra dunk. He was going to give it to a teammate, to the big guys. That's part of your – if you were raised right in basketball, that's in your DNA. Take care of the big men. It's harder for them to run, although in this day and age, they're also damn fast and agile. But it's the right way to play. Dennis Schroeder ain't making that pass. Probably. Yeah, OG, yeah. Probably not. Gary Trent, definitely not. G League, no one. It's so disappointing. Not your 1% of the G League guys will make that pass. It's the right way to play. Yeah, basketball is jazz. If we all in rock, we all can play super loud and it sounds rock. In jazz, I've got to make sure I tone it down a notch if you're going to take it up a notch and vice versa. And it's the way it's supposed to be. I think Scotty's kind of found out, okay, I can assert myself here, here, and here. I still could play the way I always like to play in these other places. And my balance overall would be good, especially if I bring it on defense. And that's where he and Mobley both really shine. We knew that about Mobley. Scotty was not the same defender for the first couple of years that Mobley was. That's coming. And now he's unbelievable. Blocking threes and he's a monster. No,
have,
so is OG, by the way.
They have tools over there in Toronto. It's just a matter of what, you know.
I'll tell you, don't sleep on them. There's a few teams, they're one of them. They're just watch out. We're gonna talk about another one probably later, maybe. You'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're very good. You mentioned Jokic and Embiid at the top. I mean, what's there to say? I mean, Jokic has been otherworldly as well all season. I was in Brooklyn last night to see a little bit of Sixers, Nets, and, you know, it was a 3 o'clock sleepy afternoon game. You know, it's a weird time for NBA players. So, like, the first quarter, everybody's kind of like, oh, I just woke up from a nap, kind of cranky and weird. But, man, once that second half hit, I'm like, geez, Embiid. And just so skilled and so big. Yeah. It is, listen, it's a treat, people, to watch these players. And, look, this Sixers team, and I want to be very clear about something. I am a James Harden fan here, and look, people can say whatever they want about his basketball game. Like, this dude at his peak in Houston, that was some of the best offensive basketball in the history of the NBA. Your eyeballs tell you that, and all the data tells you that. Like, he was that good. But this team, David, oh man, they look like they're having so much fun.
Philly.
Playing with each other. Like, it's a joy to harp on that again. And all the role players, Melton, Covington, everyone is happy doing what they got to do. Maxie and Embiid playing their game. Listen, if Maxie's all NBA, shit, look out.
Well, look out. Anyway, I mean, they're very good. The test of all these teams is the same test it really is for anything in life. It's easy to be someone's friend or partner when it's all puppy dogs and ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you when the hurricane hits? You know, there's a college player that I help, very, very, very good college player who really has not had a good start, probably because he got hurt before the season started. And he finished really terribly the other night. And his team was upset in a shocking way. Very, very good college team. And he has an agent like all these college guys have agents now. I mean, NCAA certified. There's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And I texted his agent. I said, make sure he hears from you tonight. If you want to be a good agent, because it's easy to jump off the bandwagon when they're struggling.
Yep.
And I did my thing. We'll see how Philly does when the hurricane hits. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
The storm's coming. We know.
Always. And now Tyrese is talented enough and Embiid is talented enough to be able to probably find safe harbor against most teams, even during a hurricane. But we'll see how the chemistry is and everything. Tobias has been, I thought, solid. I'm not looking at his metrics. I'm going to look right now. But when I watched them play, I've watched a lot of clips on Tobias and been really happy with what I've seen from him. For a guy that's playing for so long.
He's no longer standing in the corner, David, just waiting, right? That's what his role was before.
Yeah.
He's much more engaged.
His mid-range game is really, really good. I'm using him as a model for some younger players that I have as to how to get to the second box and get off 2 feet and get solid jumpers up. Yeah,
he's very good at that.
All he needs to be, he doesn't have to be Chris Middleton. He could be a step below that and just be a solid tertiary guy with Tyrese and Joel running the show.
The other thing that stood out to me, David, on the EPM top 15, you know, of course, all these young players and all this stuff.
Yeah, LeBron.
The old heads are still hooping. LeBron, Steph, KD, they're still doing their thing in this league. And, you know, this happens, you know, every generation it happens. The players go away, they retire, new ones come in, and it's, you know, but, this crew has been very, very good. And we've been very lucky to witness the playing of these three. I mean, what LeBron's doing at 38, 39, however old he is unbelievable. I worry because he has to do this against bad teams like Portland early in the season. I worry what that means for later, but I mean, it's just beautiful to watch to see what those guys are still able to do. And that's just a testament to their hard work and how much they love the game.
I completely agree. Nothing to add.
Exactly. All right. You did a top five players of 2021, that draft class, I believe.
Yeah.
And we talked about a little bit about Scotty and Kay a little bit, but let's talk about the rest of that crew. Like, where are all these players right now? We know where Scotty is. As they head towards this is a big year for them, right?
This is an extension year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an extension year. Suggs has been terrific on defense. The Magic, we'll get to the Magic later. They've been terrific on defense. He's a big part of that. He really is. And Mobley, very good progress from last year.
I was worried about him beginning of the year. Yeah. I was like,
No, he's come around. He's done well. I didn't look at his EPM, but it's pretty good.
Let me see where he is.
Yeah, I think he's doing well. Cade Cunningham, not as good. You know, Cade just doesn't. I watched him a lot on film yesterday.
Mobley, good.
Yeah, Mobley's good. Cade, he's not finishing at the rim. He's not shooting well at all from any level. He looks slow. His release is below his chin. He's tall, but it's below his chin. I'm a little worried about Cade as a rock star player, which everyone thought he was the consensus number one pick. And Detroit's just so beat up and young. It's two.
And bad.
They're very bad. That's part of the problem, though. Jalen Green, still not turning that corner.
Yeah, nothing exciting.
I watched him. I've not looked at his EPM, but I would guess it's pretty average at best. He's just not there.
He's still middling. Middling would be nice if he was a net neutral. He's where he was last year, minus 1.3, 58th percentile.
Yeah, so still young. He's not made that leap like Scotty has and Mobley to a lesser degree. But it's funny, you know, going into every draft, everyone's so caught up in these top five. And meanwhile, we're now into almost a month into the third season. And you know, they've had moments here and there, but, you know, it's not like other than Scotty, they're not setting the world on fire. Mobley's done really well.
The thing about Cade that's, not disappointing is the right word. Remember this summer, David, he was on the select team. So not the team that actually went, and he was killing everybody. I was like, oh my God, Cade, we're so excited. And it just didn't translate. And often we like to look at those things as like a harbinger for what happens to you in this season. And it's just, for whatever reason, hasn't translated. Do you think, so you mentioned the injuries have sapped some of the athleticism, which already wasn't high to begin with. Is it also a situation of, so all those injuries, and they weren't good to begin with. So now worse players are on the floor with you. So it's just making a bad thing look way worse than
that
it already is.
It's true. I haven't studied their system. I just watched the players, but he's just not shooting well. That's probably the biggest thing. He's just not shooting well. You have to be able to make shots. And at any level, he's not doing it at the rim, mid-range or the three. And so maybe he's got, he can find his footing in one place and then build from there. He just hasn't played a lot. So let's just, yeah. let's give it some time.
Yeah, no, it's, listen, big year, you know, we're early in the season, still 13 games. Let's give these guys a chance to see where they end up. So you had a question in the doc, and the question is Jamal Mosley the next great head coach? And I thought it was interesting because we'd always talked about Mosley and we kind of like what they were doing down there, but it never quite really has come around yet, and it's still early, but Orlando, one of the better defenses in the NBA. Yeah, which I'm like, Orlando? And they got talented players on offense. What's going on in Orlando, David?
They were better last year than they were 2 years ago. They're just really guarding it. And do yourself a favor, anyone listening to this, go to NBA.com, go to the stats section for team stats, and just click traditional stats for the teams. And everything is hyperlinked. At least it is for me. I'm assuming it is for everybody. Mm-hmm. And you click on this steals. Orlando's like second in the league in steals.
Yeah.
And just watch their swarming defense. It's awesome. Like they're averaging almost 10 steals a game. And most of those steals, not all of them, I didn't watch all of them anyway, but most of the ones I saw, maybe I saw 40 today, were not steals where one guy was just throwing a bad pass to another guy. It came from a sequence of events where Orlando defended sequence 1, 2, 3 well. That led to the fourth action, and they stole the ball there or picked the guy's pocket. They earned steals. They didn't just have one guy stripping a guy at half court. In fact, I don't think that happened one time that I watched. I did see a couple where they chased from behind and got a pick and roll and back tip. That's good. But most of them came from just really, really good aggressive defense on the whole, which allowed for the individual to make the play that he made. I'm going to go see them in person tomorrow night. I've not watched an NBA game in person yet this year, so I'm going to go watch Orlando. It's a, my wife will be with my daughter. I'm giving them a night alone. I'll just go, hey, I'll be back that night, but I'm going to go watch them. They're really, and they played Toronto, who used to play this way. Mm-hmm. They used to play this way. So, yeah, I was really impressed watching that film and seeing what they're doing. And Jamal's story is really interesting. I've been someone, I'm not against anyone wanting to be a coach, but I am a little biased against the teams that only hire the former NBA players to be coaches. Jamal Mosley played lower level professional basketball. And I'm not denigrating it. It wasn't the EuroLeague. It wasn't the NBA. And he's coaching because he's earned it as a coach. And he's coaching his ass off. And they drilled the Pacers last night in Indiana defensively. Or Indiana's a top offensive team. I don't know where they're rated right now. Have you looked?
Indiana was 2 last time I looked.
Offensive rating?
Yeah. They were up there.
Yeah. No, I know. And they have their number 7 now after last night's shellacking.
Yep.
They were destroyed by Orlando defensively. And maybe Indiana's fault to some degree, but Orlando deserves credit because they keep doing it. So just keep an eye on Orlando and more importantly, Jamal Mosley, because as I said, it's a coach's league. You get a guy that can really be special and push the right buttons. Like Jonathan Isaac is back. He's just playing some, but he's a wrecking ball on defense. It's something to watch. They're fun to watch.
Well, David, as you know, coaching isn't necessarily about your ability to do the thing you are coaching your player to do.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
That has nothing to do with it.
Yep.
It's do they trust you to teach them a skill and make them better at whatever it is their particular, and I'm just using a coaching at any sport, to make them better at what they do. If you can, that means you're a good coach, right? That's what coaching is. Do you have trust? Can you communicate? Can you inspire, right? That's what that's about. Doesn't matter if you play in the NBA or not. Do you know ball?
It shouldn't matter.
Right.
You'll have, I've had this before where I've had players say, so-and-so didn't play in the game. How would I ever listen to him? And I've said to them, well, good thing my players have never said that. Either I can help you play better or I can't. And if I'm doing the right thing and you're not open-minded, that's on you. But if you're open-minded and you fail, well, that's on me. And most players don't care. They just want to play better. If you can help them play better. So there's system and strategies in place. The player development's in place, potentially, those kinds of things. And they play better, man, they'll do anything for you. Players do anything for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've said this before on this show a million times. I'm not saying it because David's here. It's a factual statement. Any player that I speak to that David has worked with, and I say, hey, how are you? Like, my buddy Coach Thorpe, their face lights up like a Christmas tree every single time. And that is a testament to what David's talking about. Like, they love this man because not only helps them with their game, but like, he cares about them as individuals and people. And that's so much a big part about what this is.
It definitely is. Like, it would be for any of us, right? I've had mentors that only cared about me as a coach. I like the mentors better when I was a young man who cared about me. I remember one time I was, I've probably never told you this. I was lucky enough to be in the same gym for the 19 and under, maybe it was 17 and under, National AU Championship. I don't remember. It was in St. Pete. Penny Hardaway and Chris Webber were in the same tournament. They were both in my gym. I was in charge of like managing the gym because whoever was directing it for the States knew that I was a lifer for basketball. So I was, you know, I was 25 years old. And it was the weekend before I got married. And Lon Kruger was there recruiting. He was at Florida then. And he had just started, really. And I had cut my finger on opening a can of tuna. And it was a pretty bad gash on my finger. And he said, first thing he said, he looked at it, he said, you'll be all right for your wedding? He knew I was getting married the next week. And that meant a lot to me. He was recruiting my players pretty hard. So he got to know me. But it just taught me a lesson. And by the way, that's who he is. If you know Lon Kruger, in fact, my son plays his son's team today. Oh. His son, Kevin, head coach of UNLV, and they play today. Yeah, you're supposed to care about them. But in Jamal Mosley's case, I don't know what it is. I'll find out. They have a coach on their staff that I've known for 30 years. I've just not asked him about it. Other than when he took the job, he left Portland. His name is Dale Osborne. He said, Jamal called. I really think he's great. He's doing something. They're doing something because they're really defending with passion and purpose. They're really connected. They're swarming defensively. And they're long as hell. And I know that's Jeff Weltman, the president. He's, you know, he did the same thing in Milwaukee. Just length matters. Although Jalen Suggs isn't so long, and he's an important player for them at the point of attack. They've got Wagner, not Franz, his brother.
Yeah,
playing pretty well at center, and he's not that long. They're doing something right. They're teaching the game the right way. They're emphasizing the right things. They're getting guys to buy in, and so we're very excited about OKC. When they have Paolo Banchero, who's not yet killing it. He's also in year two. Let's be patient. But I'm excited. You know, I used to love when they were good because I could always go see the finals in 2 hour drive.
Yeah.
I've not been able to do that in a long time. Then it was Miami, which was a 4.5 hour drive. Not bad. Right, I don't want to get a plane. I'd rather just get there, quickly. But I like Orlando. They're on the right track.
No, they're doing well. That defense you mentioned, that's huge. Because listen, it's getting turnovers and steals. That's how they're getting points. Because offensively in the half court, great.
Still a challenge.
Still a challenge. Yeah. But good stuff we're seeing from the Orlando Magic. I saw this clip from Friday's Utah Jazz Phoenix Suns game, and it's something that you and I always talk about, David, which is you can make basketball entertaining and fun and also informative at the same time. It's not hard. It really requires minimal effort by the broadcast crew. And I was very happy that it was Ryan Rucco was the play-by-play guy, and it was RJ, Richard Jefferson, and JJ Redick. Now, it helps the three of them get along, and there's chemistry already there. Of course, that makes it much easier. But Rucco, JJ had mentioned that the Suns had run Spain pick and roll literally like five straight times. And Ryan just goes, well, JJ, a fan at home might be wondering, what is the difference between Spain pick and roll and regular pick and roll? And it sounded so much like Rucco was like, what is the difference? Like almost like he was like, what is the difference? And JJ is very good at this. He's like, explained it so simply during a free throw shooting, because who cares what's happening while they're shooting free throws? And it was just brilliant. I'm like, guys, you can do this all the time. It's so easy.
I don't know why they hate basketball fans so much. I don't know why. Our directors hate us because no one's watching more. I really believe no one's watching more games than me in the world. I'm not saying I'm number one. I might be close.
You watch a lot.
I'm downloading 50, 60, 70 clips a morning. Very commonly. And I do have the audio on for some of them. And I do catch 3, 4, 5 games every night. I don't know why we have to see the person sitting and talking when there's a game going on. Why we can hear him. He's not doing anything but talking. Just show us the game. I don't need to have a side screen. I definitely don't want the full screen. And I wouldn't say it's once a game, but it's more than once a week where we miss a play. because the director had the camera on. He put the telecast with the camera on the player or the person or the coach who was not playing. It just drives me crazy. And then to your point, on the announcer side, it's the same thing. I don't know why they do what they do. I was talking to someone the other day about my idea of a stand-up comedian being color commentator. And I remember I talked to someone and pretty much, you know, connected to the NBA. I just remember who it was, who told me about a friend of theirs who's a stand-up comic. Didn't used to be, but he's now a stand-up comic. But played like college basketball. Like they'd be fantastic. Because they'd be funny. But the boring stuff, enough of that. We're trying to get people to fall in love with the game.
So I was very happy that Ruko and JJ and Rocky do that. And they that trio tends to do that more than most. That's it's interesting. I wonder, because they often do the late games on Friday nights, and I'm like, why don't you put them in the earlier slot? They probably would do better. But anyway, maybe it's a logistical thing. I don't know. But I love that idea. I just think that you can teach the game. But it's an old school mentality, David, right? Like the way this game was sold for years was as a TV show with individual stars. We need to see what Michael Jordan's doing every second of the entire
time. All about the individual star, right?
Because he is what matters. Right? That was the thing. And it's like, guys, first of all, as you know, the person they're interviewing, whether it's a coach or a player, they're not saying anything insightful anyway in that clip.
No.
They're almost always saying nothing insightful. Right. So as your point, audio, keep it on the game and we can go from there. But anyway, kudos to Ruko and JJ and RJ for explaining Spain pick and roll. Last thing before we go, I saw something cute over the weekend. The Stanford women's basketball team beat Duke in overtime, and Cameron Brink on Stanford had her career high, 29 points. She's a highly recruited player. She's actually friends with Stephen Curry. Their families are friendly. Mm-hmm. And she's a New Balance athlete. She's in a bunch of commercials and stuff. And so she scores her career high. She's coming off the court, so she's down into the tunnel of the arena, right, heading back towards her locker room. There's like a little procession line of assistant coaches and managers like, good job, Cameron, like high-fiving her. And you could tell, like, I mean, I can only imagine the feeling you have when you've just scored your career high in OT and we won. You're on top of the world. She heads into the locker room expecting to continue more celebrating. All her teammates are sitting down and she's like, what the fuck's happening? And they stop and they're like, no, we're just kidding. And they all throw water on her and everybody gets super excited. It was like, I always joke about, nobody cares about this cheesy stuff. But you do. It's good stuff.
Game is so hard at every level. To be a college player, to be a pro player, you have to work so hard and study so much film and whatever, take care of your body. And if you do it and don't get joy from it, it's really not a great life. Yeah. I'm happy to say that in most sports that I'm involved with or have watched, boys can celebrate as well as girls can. I like that. It's not feminine or masculine to celebrate. No. Good thing. And as a high school basketball coach, I've seen my share of girls' volleyball practices because early in the season, like September, October,
they practice before you.
You have to wait for your turn. Yep. And they celebrate after every point, or they huddle if it's a bad play. They still huddle. I like that. Yeah. We're supposed to be connecting. It's a team sport.
Yes. No, it was a wonderful scene. Very cool for her teammates having a good time with her. Yeah, guys, this is supposed to be fun. That's why we do this.
Yeah.
All right, folks. As I mentioned, we'll be back with another episode before the holiday. If you want to get those Ask Coach Thorpe questions in, again, that is TrueHoop, TrueHoop, at TrueHoop.com. And we'll get inside Coach Thorpe's big basketball brain. Until next time, everybody, take care.